Access number 28673, Mr. Don Mitchard, Real 16. Now, did you do any other flights? I presume you did. You fly the Meteor as much at Tangmere, or indeed at
not that much, but I did fly it. Yeah, we were doing flight testing on it and stuff like that. You know, I never did get a chance to fly the Vampire, which I would have liked to have.
Did you like that? You continued to like the Meteor then?
Yes.
And anything else while you were there or at the West Raynham? Or sorry, you were at Great Messingham, were you? But I mean, anything else before your demo?
Trying to think. Can't think of anything that stands out.
Well, tell me about your demo then. I mean, how did that come about?
Well, we were told that there was a system, depending on age and length of service. So you were all demobbed. You weren't all demobbed at the same time. And I was a bit held back a bit because of my age, although I'd had the service because I joined in 1940. But I did... I was demobbed on the 13th of July 1946.
So you did, you know, almost another year after the war had finished.
Yes.
And all at West Raynham, at Tangmere and West Raynham.
Yeah.
And what was the demob process? Tell me how they did it. I mean, what did you get? What did they do?
Well, the first thing we had to do was to go around and get discharged from our airfield, you know, as you had to do whenever you left, go around and get signed off at the stores and the canteen and all, you know, all the various sections. You had your thing. We had to do all that as usual. And then I was sent, I had a bit of a party in the mess the night before, which I don't remember much about, but one of my friends tried to fill me in about. We got on the train and we came down to Uxbridge, which was the demob centre. Well, for officers it was, I'm not sure about the ranks. My rank, of course, was flying officer then, but I did stay on in the VR after, and I got made up the flight lieutenant.
I'll come back to that. Touch on that. Now, what happened when you got to Uxbridge?
Well, I got to Uxbridge and went through all the procedures of signing off and then having a medical, because they're very fussed to make sure that there wasn't anything wrong with you. You came out because of compensation.
And were you okay?
I was okay. In fact, I did... later on in life have trouble with my ears, my hearing, and they did give me a one-off pension because of that, what they call sound induced deafness, because, you know, sitting next to a Rolls Royce Merlin without any...
I'll come back to that.
Yes, okay.
So what else did you get? A suit? Or
yes, I got a suit, which you had a choice of about three, and I remember I chose dark grey with a white stripe on it.
Any good?
No, not really. I mean, the point was, you walked down the road and you met everybody wearing the same type. There were only three types of suit. One was a brown one, I think. One was a grey one, and I can't remember what the other one was. And they gave you a trilby hat and all sorts of socks and shirts and stuff like that, you know. But it was all standard, and I think... Well, when you walked down the road or went down the local pub, there was about half a dozen people all with the same demob outfit on. But I'm not complaining about it, because there weren't clothes you could buy anyway. Well, we got clothes coupons, but...
Did you get anything else? Was there a gratuity of any sort? Or?
Yes. The gratuity was... a vast sum, I think, of about £150 or something like that.
That was quite big then.
Yeah. And I had then decided that I thought I would like to become a civil engineer. And I got a cousin who was in the profession, and he put me right on lots of things. And So what he managed to get in those days, things aren't like they are now. I mean, if I was going into civil engineering, you know, I'd go off to university and do my degree, and then I'd get my professional qualification after that and all the rest of it. But what they did in those days was that you got yourself articled to an engineer. And my cousin got me fixed up to be articled to the borough engineer or urban era, whatever he was called, at a place called Froome in Somerset, because I was a Somerset boy anyway. And I was articled to him, but in those days you had to pay a premium. Don't anymore, of course. And I had to pay him £100 premium. Now, that I used my gratuity for, and which a lot of people just went down the pub and drank it as well. So I think perhaps I was a bit more sensible than that. And I used that. And also, because I was able to apply for a training course, I got my course, and also I think I got £1 a week, you know, as gratuity, which, as I was married at the time, didn't go very far, to be honest. But we managed, and all the time I was swatting to get my professional qualifications, which luckily I did get, and I'm now a chartered engineer anyway.
That was your career, was it?
Yes.
Right, for all your whole career as a civil engineer.
Yeah.
Well, we'll leave that there. Now, what about this business with the RAF Reserve? Was it the RAF Reserve? Or
The RAF VR, Voluntary Reserve.
Now, tell me about that.
Well, I didn't stay in it because they more or less half disbanded it, or they didn't do a lot in the VR, because I think probably the powers that be were concentrating on demobilizing and sorting the people out. But they did then set up the RAF VR. I wanted to go back and do some flying with them, but I'm afraid they decided that was a luxury the country couldn't afford, because it was just, you know, pleasurable stuff. And I joined the airfield construction branch, because I was by this time civil engineering.
And what year was that?
That would be, one minute, early 50s, I would think, about 1952, something like that.
And how long did you do that for?
Oh, I was in that until they disbanded it, which was probably about 6 or 8 years after that. 58. And I used to go away to camp, and I got promoted to flight lieutenant while I was in the VR. And then they wrote and said, it's been disbanded, and you are now on the reserve of Air Force officers. And as far as I know, I'm still on it. So I was thinking of when they were going out to Iraq, whether I might have been called up as the oldest tornado pilot in the business, but apparently not. So.
Now, can I just ask, how did the war affect you, physically, mentally, good or bad, do you think? You know, and it's a sort of amorphous question, but, you know, just what effects do you think it had on you?
It didn't have a tremendous effect, I don't think, because it became a way of life, you know, because I had come straight from school and I'd gone the RAF, and then when I came out, we were, of course, still on rations, and I was had a family, I just took it in my stride, I think. I did get these, what I was telling you about, these sort of nightmares.
How bad?
Pretty bad. You know, I'd go to sleep and I'd wake up in the middle of the night in a sweat, as I was in the middle of a dogfight, you know, being shot at by bloody Germans and all the rest of it. And then I'd put it on one side and try again. But that went on for a bit. I think it would be difficult for me to put a time on it, to be honest. But probably a couple of years, I would think. But it gradually got less and less, you know. So that occasionally I'd get in a bit of a sweat, and think back, and then something would crop up that would remind you.
So the last interview session you mentioned triggered.
It must have done, I suppose. But I mean, you know, things that happen to you, or you might meet one of your old friends, or you'd read in the obituaries that one of your mates had died, you know, and this would trigger things off.
Now, what associations and old comrades associations are you a member of, if any?
Well, when I came out of the RAF, I joined the RAF Association, RAFA, which is still going strong, of course.
Now, what does that do for you, or you know?
Well, the great thing in those days was that we used to meet up on social occasions. But, of course, they set about setting up welfare organisations, which they still do. And they've got a very strong welfare organisation, RAFA have. They've got a rest home up at Storrington, in fact, which is a very well-known one, a lovely place. But I joined the local, we set up a local branch of the RAFA, and I was chairman for a while. And then I moved up to Essex. I moved my job. I went up to Basildon, you know, it's a new town, isn't it? And so I went up there as an engineer building Basildon, if you like. And we didn't have, and I dropped out of the RAFA Association then because they didn't have a branch up there, as far as I knew. But when I came back this way, they did start another branch here, which I joined. I was chairman of that as well until I
got to.
Yeah.
Now, what else are you a membership of? A member of, sorry.
Right. British Legion.
What does that do for you? How important is the British Legion to you?
Well, it's the main ex-service organisation, of course. I mean, welfare, I suppose, is their first thing when they sell their poppies, don't they, after people.
Do you go to their meetings or outings?
I don't go very often. Well, what I do is, because I am a member of the Aircrew Association, which is another thing, but that's all ex-aircrew, you see. I'm a member of the Aircrew Association.
And what does that do?
Well, we meet every month, and this is the thing I was telling you about, where we have a speaker, and it's a sort of reunion thing, I suppose. We're all the same sort of people, and we enjoy each other's company. We have a booze up every so often. We had a big do at Christmas, and
So it's important to you?
Yes, it is, really. Well, of course, I was chairman of it 20 years ago, and then I gave that up, and I was asked, because the numbers are rapidly diminishing, I was asked if I'd like to go back and be chairman again. And I thought about it, first of all, for a little while, and then I thought, yes, I will, because I am the sort of person that really needs to be doing something. And I thought, well, that'll give me something to do, you know. And I'll show you, you might be interested.